Ghost Knight Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another edition of Paranormal Underground Radio. I am your host, Rick Hale, and I am here, as always, with the hostess with the mostest, Karen Put On Your Mom Jeans Frazier. Hey, Karen, how you doing?
I'm not wearing those mom jeans tonight, Rick. I still have to order pajama jeans.
But you are the hostess with the mostest, yes.
I am the hostess with the mostest, that's right. You know it. So as I was, back behind the scenes information for a sec, I sent you that little quick text saying you start, Rick, and then I wasn't sure because you didn't say okay, so I thought, oh, is he gonna do it?
I got it covered, no problem.
I know. So I saw something interesting in the news today.
Okay, lay it on me.
We are going to have a super moon. Did you know about this?
A super moon? Is there going to be like an S and it's going to fly overhead with a cape and all that?
That's
that would
right.
be awesome. Yeah,
it's the looming super moon. It's actually on Yahoo. It's their top story, like in those little, you know, stories that really aren't stories that they have along the top when you Yahoo right now. And it's there. It says, will the March 19th super moon trigger natural disasters? Unfortunately, they came out with this story after I got the lightning round questions. Mm-hmm. So I don't get to ask about it, but apparently it's going to pass as close to Earth as it ever does, and it's going to be a full moon. So
that's
apparently
awesome.
There's going to be this big giant moon, and this guy is predicting that it's, of course, well, let's say it all together now, the end of the world. Everybody run for your bomb shelters, folks.
Yes, I've been hoping for the end of the world all week. I don't know. Supermoon, though, sounds like I should be like... I don't know, maybe Burt Coates would probably do this, you know, tie a cape around his butt and just run around mooning everybody. Right, Burt?
Hey, be nice. Burt's going to be joining us later for the lightning round. He tells everybody, Rick, that he was banned from the show. And so I thought he was banned. Yeah, we're just out to prove that he was totally not banned. So,
all right, cool, man.
Suck it, Burt. That's all I'm saying. We'll show you. We'll have you back on the show, darn it. So, interesting show tonight because we are going to be talking to Joseph from Proof Paranormal. And what we're talking to him about is a really, really rough case that they had. And, you know, cases like that, I've never, ever been involved in anything like this. And so it's always interesting for me because, of course, I'm the one who thinks that ghosts are nice and sweet and loving and they never do anything evil or bad. And you've been telling
if only that were true.
Yeah, you've been telling me for quite some time. So, so I was at the health food store today and I had on my little, I have my very, very tastefully embroidered Paranormal Underground jacket. And it just has a little, like a little Paranormal Underground logo pretty much above the boob.
Okay.
So I was in the health food store today and some lady was asking me about it. And she said, well, what is that? And I said, it's a magazine. And I was telling her about it. And she started in on just how she was terrified of ghosts. And what do you think her experience with ghosts is that has caused her to be terrified?
I hope it's not anything that has to do with that television show, Ghostly Lovers. She hasn't had an experience like that, has she?
No, but she's all she's seen of hauntings are things that are on television. And so she knows a place that has a reputation that's haunted. She can't wait to get the hell out. She's terrified of it. And when I told her, I said, you know, that's so not the way it really is.
You know, it's kind of always funny because, like, you know, speaking to paranormal television shows, I always loved the show A Haunting from Discovery Channel. But I'm at work last night and I'm like watching some episodes and I'm thinking to myself, it's like, does everybody who experience a haunting, are they all Catholic? Have you noticed that on the show? I mean, they're all like, well, because of this, we contacted our local priest. I'm sure that they're, you know what I'm saying? Have you ever noticed that?
I mean, and it's like everybody who's ever experienced a UFO lives in Arkansas and has two teeth.
Yeah, exactly.
And it lands in the hog pen, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, just I guess it's one of those universal things. Catholics experience hauntings and people from Arkansas with hog pens and dubious dental care experience UFOs.
Sounds like Fox Lake, Illinois here.
Okay, nobody from Arkansas emailed me about that. That was a joke. It was
anybody with any complaints, please contact Karen Frazier at paranormalunderground.net.
Or Taps Paramagazine at Taps Paramagazine.
So, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit more about, you know, what Joe Gallant is going to be talking with us about tonight.
Okay.
And, you know, it's a person should consider themselves lucky if they're a paranormal researcher and investigator that they go their entire career without ever having to deal with, you know, an inhuman entity.
Well, I actually have not gone my entire career without having to deal with an inhuman entity. It's just that the inhuman entity that I have to deal with is unfortunately my ex-husband's new wife.
Oh, that's definitely an inhuman entity.
My God. Let me tell you. Okay. That's going to come out in court. Okay. Yeah.
You're in trouble now.
Yeah. Yeah, Cheryl, when we put together this show for the podcast, let's just edit out that I said that.
Got it.
No, don't edit it out. Don't edit it out. I'm sure she deserves to be called an inhuman entity.
But no, I do understand. She does. She's a horrible, horrible person.
Okay.
But, you know, yeah, I understand what you're saying. And I know, but my paranormal career, because I'm such a high-powered paranormal kind of person. I haven't encountered anything like that. I've encountered a few things that feel a little bit dark, but nothing that's ever done anything horrifying to me.
But you know what? You know, just because somebody was like, you know, like the Warrens, for example. Don't get me wrong. I always respected their work. I thought they did great stuff for the paranormal field. But everything to them was a demon. Mm-hmm. Trust me when I say this. Not people do not change when they die. If you are a douche in life, you are going to be a douche in death. That's all there is to it. So you're going to be a douche or douche in death.
Well, I may douche to the death, and then I'll be a douche. How's that?
No, but but seriously though, I mean, a human entity is just as capable as, you know, being just as evil, rotten, horrible to, you know, anybody living in a home. But you know, we'll talk a little bit more to Joe about that, about how they came to the conclusion that this was possibly a demonic entity.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Like I say, anytime that I can talk to somebody who makes me lose sleep, I'm good. Mm-hmm. I lay awake at night, stare at the ceiling and think, holy crap, why do I do this? Why do I do this? Why do I talk to these people?
Sometimes I think I'm like too stupid. I don't know what it is to fear these things. I don't know why.
You're just fearless. I'm not a terrible, oh my gosh. Okay. So speaking of fearless, get this. Okay. So we investigated. I know I mentioned last week that I was going on an investigation this weekend with a group of people, and then I blogged about it last week as well. We investigated a haunted town, including a theater and a morgue and several houses and a mansion. And it's a place called Port Gamble. It's on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington State. And one of the places is called the Walker Ames Mansion. Great big huge house. It needs a lot of restoration, but beautiful house. Well, the rumor is that what goes on in the basement of this place is that there's this guy who's kind of off his rocker, and he had been locked down in the basement by a woman. And so he hates women. And so he Fs with women who come down in the basement, right?
Okay.
So Jamie and I was investigating with Jamie from Bridgetown Paranormal, a good group out of Vancouver, Portland, Washington, Portland, Oregon. And she and I go in and we looked down in this basement, and both of us, and I'm not afraid when I go ghost hunting, both of us were scared to go down into the basement. we made two guys go down there with us. And then once we were down there, they left. And Jamie and I were sort of standing there talking to this ghost. And we said to him, you know, we're sorry this happened to you. We're sorry that a woman did that to you. We would never do that to you. We would never force you to stay in this basement. So this story has a point. Are you ready?
Okay.
We're leaving the basement. Not anything really that I picked up in the basement there. You know, I didn't feel anything. I haven't listened to my recordings yet, but I don't imagine I'm going to catch anything. But it just seemed like kind of a dank, moldy basement.
Yeah.
So as we're leaving, I say, because one of the people that was investigating with us said, you need to tell this person in the basement that they can't come with you because they will try to follow you and they're a little off balance. So as we're leaving the basement, after saying, oh, we would never lock you in the basement, I say, well, we're leaving now. You can't come with us. You have to stay here. And I start up the stairs, and I felt, honest to God, like this wall of, come up after me. I hightailed it out of the basement.
You know, yeah, that's... But you know what happened is that you guys went down there with the expectation, because you had your head filled with that. Okay, it's like you have an entity down here that hates women. I mean, obviously you're going to go down there thinking it's like, okay, I'm a woman and this entity is going to do nothing but pick on me. That's why I think that it's important, like with, you know, McHenry County Paranormal Research Group, the group that I belong to, we have so many sensitives in our group that Tony Olszewski keeps, our founder and lead investigator and fearless leader, he keeps pretty much everybody in the dark. I get a little bit extra because I guess you could kind of say I'm like the unofficial second in command, I suppose you could say.
Right.
So I get a little bit extra, but I think it's important for, you know, as an investigator, when you do go into a place, that you should be kept cold.
I think so too. And this was actually a big group. It was a, it wasn't a real investigation. I actually sort of thought that what I was going to do is we were going to go and we were going to walk around following the hosts. Mm-hmm. And then we got there and there were a lot of people from the public there, and they divided them in groups and made them walk around with them. And they said to us, okay, West Coast Ghost Hunters, Bridgetown Ghost Hunters, and Karen, you guys can go do your own thing. And so we were able to, I didn't bring anything because I just thought we were going to walk around in a group, and you know. Right. Nothing ever happens in groups. So, but we did hear some of the stories and stuff ahead of time. So,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we need to take a break. When we come back, we are going to be talking to Joseph from Proof Paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be right back with Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio.
Good times.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
location identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network.
Operating frequency.
On ZTalkRadio.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio. I'm Karen Frazier. With me, as always, Rick Hale.
Hello.
Hello. So before we go to our guest, I just want to remind everybody to stop by and check out our newest site that Jamie Coates and I are doing together. It's called Ghost Secret. It's ghostsecret.org. And Rick, you were just saying amazing things about our site.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've always appreciated, you know, really good photography. I used to be real heavy into photography at one time. And, you know, the pictures are just beautiful.
Jamie's really talented. She's very, very good. Very. Yeah. Yeah, and then we throw in a bunch of my blurry crap, too, because, you know, and mine are usually, Jamie's are like on these very serious secrets, and mine are, you know, things like, yeah, I got laid when I was ghost hunting, things like that, so, hey, whatever works, right? So check out ghostsecret.org. You can go and look, or the other thing is if you have a secret, you can send it to us. It's ghostsecret1@gmail.com. You send us the secret, we'll add the art, and we'll put it up there, and we won't tell anybody, it's you. So check it out. Thank you. So we have our guest with us, and he was very kind to sit and listen to me do my shameless self-promotion. From Proof Paranormal, we have Joe Gallant, and he is going to tell us about a pretty intense case that he was involved in. Welcome, Joe.
Yeah, welcome, Joe.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Very good. So, we were just talking in the break a little bit that this case was so spectacular that you have attracted actually some documentary interest in it, right?
I have Paranormal Witness. It's by Raw Television.
And so now when you were saying that they're casting, and I asked you, now who was it that you said that you think that you would like to play you in the recreations?
Well, everyone loves Jack Nicholson. He has a multitude of talent, so I would pick him, but he looks nothing like me, so that couldn't work out, you know.
How about Charlie Sheen? I hear he's looking for a job.
Can we please not talk about Charlie Sheen?
He's not up for it, I don't think.
Okay, so let's talk about this case. It's in Mansfield, right?
Absolutely. It's one of the probably worst cases I've ever dealt with.
So, go ahead and tell us the story in your own words, and we'll interrupt you frequently with questions. How's that sound?
Do you want me to start from the beginning, or?
I do, yes.
Every good story needs a beginning.
Well, a little bit for the Moore family side. They purchased the home in 1999, late 1999, and it's a historic home. It used to be owned by the Mansfield Training School, which is a hospital for the feeble-minded, which is now shut down. And haunted, of course, from what I hear. And the Moore family hadn't experienced anything. You know, I mean, it's an old house. There were some deaths in the home. But as the paranormal and the family moved in, they had experienced nothing until 2002, upon renovating the home. The occupants began experiencing what they refer to as oddities.
I'm sorry, referred to as what?
Oddities.
Oh, okay. Strange occurrences.
They said these events included nocturnal attacks. They were having night terrors where they would dream about getting up and killing the entire family, shadowy figures in physical contact. So they were pretty terrified by that. But they waited a couple of years to kind of let go. Things smoothed over a little bit, and Mrs. Moore gave me a call February 19th, 2009. And I remember the date because this case will never leave me. It just won't. On February 26th, the investigation began. Now, while investigating and even upon review of the evidence, Proof had no reason to believe, nor did any evidence indicate the presence of a diabolical or demonic entity. Mm-hmm. There were no scratching, there were no odd smells, there was, you know, that feeling of a really heavy feeling in the home. So, of course, I categorized it as a residual, an intelligent haunting. Mm-hmm. And even during the investigation process, we didn't experience anything that we would consider a negative entity. Mm-hmm. I mean, we heard some humming in the house on the third floor. We heard some steps walking back and forth, but nothing to an extreme where we can say, okay, there's something really bad in your home. The investigation lasted... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, he was just saying, mm-hmm.
Oh, Okay. Mm-hmm. The investigation lasted approximately 48 hours, and we conducted a reveal about a week and a half later. And, you know, I explained to the Moore family that we didn't feel as though there was anything demonic, and she kept on complaining about nocturnal attacks, and I said, well, perhaps someone's trying to come through and tell you something. And to be honest with you, before the vanishing, I would have never thought that what did happen would have happened. And I kind of feel like it's, I put the Moore family in more danger than they already were.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, I conducted the banishing about 2 weeks later. And it wasn't because I thought as though a banishing was necessary as much as the family just insisted that something be done. Because whether it was residual or intelligent or intellectual or demonic, they wanted whatever was there out.
Mm-hmm.
I started the banishing about 9 p.m. I started with the interior of the house. I went to the kitchen, to the dining room, the living room, completed the first and second floor, no problems. I started the third floor. I started to feel a little bit anxious, almost like I was going to have a panic attack. As soon as I left the third floor, I was almost stuck in a certain spot. I started getting sweats, and then cold right away, and then sweats and cold back and forth. Started getting shaky. My hands and toes were getting like tingly and numb. And usually, with a proof standard, if anyone starts to feel fearful or afraid, you know, we ask that you step away, regroup, and then when you feel comfortable, return. But because they didn't want to interrupt my session, I just kept on going and I ignored it. And eventually it did stop. Now the basement of the home, which was the last place to conduct the banishing, I saved for last because basements are just horrifying in general to me. It's the worst place to go. So I went ahead and I saved that for last. As soon as I headed down into the basement, I felt as though there was a cold breeze that headed behind me. And just before I hit the first beam, three beams in the basement, it was almost as if someone was holding down my legs. I could not move them whatsoever. No matter how much I tried, I couldn't. I was almost like a paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
And then it felt as though that there was a hot head of coal. Someone had taken a hot head of coal or even a torch and pushed it against and dragged against my back. And it was the worst pain. I cried. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sit here and say, well, it was not scary. It was no sun, you know. It was terrifying. I ran out of the basement, and I called one of my coworkers. They came over, opened up my shirt, soaked in blood. I went right to the emergency room, and that's where I received treatment in 48 stitches.
How many?
48.
48? Wow. Woo! 48 that's stitches. A lot of stitches.
It is, and it was very painful, and even now today, I mean, it was, I think this whole case was my ultimate test, and it kind of, you know, said to me, well, you're either going to be in the paranormal, or you're going to stop for good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still here, so that's a good part. But, you know, even now, the more family experiences some things, but they're not having physical contact. They're not having nocturnal effects anymore. They do have whispers, disembodied voices, things like that, but nothing of a dangerous nature.
Well, did that happen after the banishment, or did you have to go in and do something further?
No, I didn't go back into the home. I had actually contacted Lorraine Warren, and I had contacted Father McKenna, to have them go in and see what they can do. I'm not a demonologist. I'm a parapsychologist, but I'm not a demonologist. I don't usually deal with demonic hauntings. And again, if I would have initially known that Ms. Moore's home was demonic, I most likely wouldn't have done it. I would have tried to refer them to someone that could help them. But I definitely wasn't prepared for it. I'll tell you that now.
Now, let me ask you, Joe, do you think it's possible that that this home may have been the site of, you know, a portal haunting where anything could come through at any time?
I do believe that, and the reason I believe that is this home has a grisly history. There were four suicides in the home. It was a superintendent's home of the Mansfield Training School who committed suicide in the library, which is on the second floor.
Mm-hmm.
And during the 22 years that the hospital was running, in that amount of time, I mean, patients were abused, they were sexually abused, they were physically abused. So the home holds a grisly history and a lot of negativity.
Right.
So the possibility of something being open to that is pretty promising. Nonetheless, which I forgot to mention, everyone, we have actually discovered human remains in the basement. One of the EPs that I believe I sent to you was a man coming through said, they let me burn the children. Now, I'm not sure what was found in the basement is indeed children's remains, but it is human remains. There are bones in her basement.
Oh, my God.
What we thought was initially the hatchway, because there's tunnels that go throughout the Mansfield Training School and all the homes that were connected to such. So when we dug up this hatchway in the basement, we were initially thinking, well, that was the tunnel. When we dug it up, there was what looked like just cremated bones. So, of course, we called the police. The police came over. They identified that it is. Mm-hmm. They're looking into it further. So it has a grisly past. So, you know, the portal is definitely a promising possibility.
Yeah, you know, Joe, we were talking a little bit before we came on about, you know, the difference between a human and a diabolical. And, you know, one of the very first cases that I ever worked when I was 18 was, you know, turned out to be a diabolical. And, you know, some people don't understand that a human spirit can't really get that much energy to cause that kind of damage. So obviously it's something that's drawing energy from, you know, a different dimension or from the earth itself, because the human spirit can't, I mean, it can scratch you and it can push you, but it's not going to give you 48 stitches. Would you agree?
No, and I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. Absolutely. But it was, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it was an absolute horrifying situation. And even today, I mean, I go to therapy now, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm on an anti-anxiety medication because it's just given me an everyday panic.
Wow.
You know, and, yeah, of course, I'm a paranormal investigator. You know, and you hear a lot of investigators say, well, you know, I'm not afraid. You know, I'm a ghost hunter. That's what I do. I deal with the unpredictable. Mm-hmm. But anyone that tells you that is full of crap. Because everyone has a line. And when that line is crossed.
Right.
Well, I always tell people that, you know, how, you know, in The Wizard of Oz, the wizard says, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Right.
I say, when you're investigating the paranormal, pay close attention to the man behind the curtain, because when you get these people, they go into these homes because they see it on television with like the whole provoking thing. You know, that person behind, you know, you could be poking that person behind the curtain with a stick, mm-hmm. and they could be like this wussy little, you know, spirit that's going to go away in and of itself, or it's going to be some big, mean SOB that's going to, you know, rip your head off. So just,
absolutely. Yeah.
I say to people, stay away from that kind of thing.
Yeah, you said exactly right. I mean, you're dealing with the unpredictable. This isn't just,
right.
You know, it's not a lot of, you know, it is fun, it's interesting, you learn a lot, it's complex, but when it comes down to it, it's all unpredictable. When you go into a home or you go into a cemetery or a public domain, you don't know what's going to happen at all.
Right.
I think that's what you know, makes it scariest. You know, you could be walking and do your peeing and punch in your face. You really never know.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you almost sound, Joe, like a little bit like you might have some post-traumatic stress disorder. Is that, have you actually been, you said you're in therapy. Have you been diagnosed with that or?
PTSD, no, I have not yet. I mean, I haven't really talked about everything with her.
Uh-huh.
I try to take it slow day by day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But most likely that's what's going on. I mean, I have nightmares about it. I mean, I've been doing this for 8 years, but this is the first case where I've physically been assaulted and emotionally been damaged.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's something I'm still going to deal with, and I'm sure every day it's going to be something I'm going to be dealing with. But I'm going to move on as strong as I can.
So how do you after having an experience like that, where you probably do have some level of PTSD, I'm far from a psychologist, but I play one on TV. You know, I write about it. I write about a lot of psychology.
You
know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, you know, working in the psychology field, I, you know, work with kids who, you know, do suffer from PTSD. And one thing they do have is, you know, horrifying dreams. And anybody who is any kind of a war, you know, with PTSD will tell you, I can't stop dreaming about such and such event. I mean, Joe, if you're having those kind of horrible nightmares and terrible memories, I think that it'll probably be in your best interest to get that taken care of.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I'm, believe it or not, I'm a social worker during the day and then I go
out
at night.
So you know PTSD.
Right, but I never really, I mean, you talk to patients, you learn about what they're going through, but unless you go through it yourself, you're never going to understand, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm starting to kind of really pay attention to that, you know, at this time of my life.
So how do you go back into any unknown haunted location and investigate, given that you are suffering from this PTSD and you've had this experience? How do you get back on the horse without running and screaming?
Yeah, well, sometimes I do that, no. But, you know, I kind of try to convince myself that they're human beings. You know what I mean? At one time, they were human beings, and everyone has a line, like I was saying before. And if you think about it this way, I was going into their home, which is what they consider their home, and I'm basically an intruder. I'm a burglar.
Right.
And if I were to break into your home, Cheryl, and you didn't know me, and you didn't want me there, you're going to defend yourself and your family. And you're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that I don't come back. And I set the way I try to think about it and try to put myself in their shoes.
Right.
So as for the paranormal, I go in there with an open mind and I try my best to understand what they're going through.
Right.
And in the long run, when it comes down to doing the banishing, that's something that I most likely will never do again. I'll hire someone else to do that.
Right.
Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, you know, the banishing. When you say that you were, you know, doing a banishing, were you doing like, you know, like a ritual? Were you saging? Were you, I mean, what, you know, could you explain that to us a little bit?
Sure. The banishing we use is basically a ritual approach to banishing or smudging or ridding of any negative energy in the home. So, yeah, you're using sage, using the Bible, you're using different instruments, and you're basically yelling. Well, not really yelling. Everybody wants to say yelling. But you're demanding of their attention. You're demanding that they leave.
Right.
And I think that's what ultimately attracted them to attack. Because I'm in their home, and I'm yelling, and I'm screaming, and I'm forcing them out of the place that they've always been.
Right.
So their only defense is to retaliate.
Right. So does talking about it make it more difficult, or does it make it easier, or neither?
Is it therapeutic for you?
When I'm talking to people that I know can relate or can understand, you know, when I ever told the doctor at the hospital that, you know, because he had asked, well, you know, what's going on? What happened? You know, how, you know, blah, 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 blah. I said, well, I was attacked by a demonic entity. And he said, excuse me? You know, so when you're trying to explain yourself and talk about your feelings with someone that cannot relate or doesn't understand or is a complete skeptic in the world of paranormal, it's not something that I thrive on. But if it's someone that I can talk to that can relate, whether it relate with the paranormal or relate with attack, then yeah, I feel a bit more comfortable and it feels good to talk about it and just get it out.
Right. Now, are you Catholic?
I'm not. I'm an agnostic. I don't.
Me too. I was going to ask you something and it just flew out of my head because I'm in my mid-40s and I have teenagers and things like this happen all the time.
It'll come back.
Probably at 3:00 this morning I'm going to sit up and go, that's it, that's what I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, and she's going to wind up calling me, dude.
Oh, it'll come back. So Rick, quick cover for me while I try and remember what I was going to ask.
No problem. Now, when you were doing this banishing, I'm always kind of interested in this because in the group that I belong in, we sage homes quite a bit. I mean, we pretty much like hose these babies down. Would you say that you were provoking the spirit to come at you, or you know, you were just trying to get rid of it, and he just was like, "Hey, you know what? I'm gonna get this SOB and." Were you using that any kind of provoking?
I wasn't using any foul language, and I think, you know, I think to their perspective, yes, I was provoking. That wasn't my intention. My intention was just to get their attention and let them know that they're no longer welcome.
Now, was this you that was just doing this?
Yes, it was just me.
Okay.
Nobody else on the team was willing to go in, except for me. And I'm not going to let my client down, so I just kind of took a big breath and went for it.
Yeah.
Do they still live in this house?
They do. And they haven't had any negative experiences. The nocturnal attacks have stopped. They do still experience disembodied voices at times during the night. They still experience the footsteps on the second floor and sometimes the humming on the third floor. But as for anything negative, it's kind of diminished. Not to say that it won't come back. Most likely it's lying dormant. That's what they usually do. Yeah. As for right now, the family is content.
Okay.
No, but I got a quick question because we touched a little bit on the portal. Have you guys considered, using like a good psychic medium, if you know of any who could, close this portal? Have you contacted anybody about that?
Yeah, I don't. Well, Proof and myself, I necessarily don't employ psychics, and that's simply because I only want to provide my clients and provide myself with scientific mythology, real hard stuff. Mm-hmm. When you bring in a psychic, even though, there are psychics out there, I've met a couple really good ones, when you bring in a psychic, they're always saying, oh, did you hear that? You can come forward, I can see you, and I can't see them, I'm not a psychic.
And those are the raven dork feathers of the world.
I want to be able to provide factual evidence, scientific evidence that the home is haunted, versus just having someone say, well, this is what's going on, because it could be, that could be going on, but maybe not.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, it could be imagination, too, absolutely.
Right. So I try not to use or employ psychics. I mean, I have in the past, but it hasn't worked out to my benefit.
So I'm curious as to how you, because you left this house and you were clearly in distress and bleeding and injured, how did you put that in context for the homeowners?
Well, that's something that's always hard is When you're dealing with a haunting, you're dealing with public relations, you're dealing with family support, it's always hard to go back. If something happens in their home, whether it's a bad EVP or it's an attack, it's always kind of hard to sit down and really talk to them about that because they're already terrified as it is.
Right.
We use what we call the SLS, spirit level system. So instead of me going in and saying to Ms. Moore, well, you have a demonic entity and it has attacked me, I say, well, you have a level 5. A level 5 is a demonic entity. This is exactly what it is. This is how we're going to deal with it, blah, 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 blah. I tried to explain to Ms. Moore that the attack wasn't a malicious attack, even though I think it was. I think it's more so that they felt offended. They felt as though I was an invader, and they wanted to protect themselves and the home. Even though she was upset a bit, she stayed out of the house for 2 weeks. That's always the hardest part, I think, is dealing with the family and trying to figure out the best way of talking about what's going on.
Right. Yeah, I would think so. So you do it very, almost clinically, it sounds like, in how you explain it to
approach.
Them.
I don't want to scare people any more than they already are.
Right.
I've seen paranormal teams going in and someone's being attacked or, they're having really bad experiences and the group goes in and they say, well, you have a demonic entity and yes, it can kill you and yes, it can do this. So you're putting the family in hysteria. You're scaring them even more. So I try to take, like you said, a clinical approach and really explain every option, go through all the resources, and that usually works.
Right.
And it works for this case. So it works for this case, it works for any case.
So what do you think about shows like Ghost Adventures, where they go in and they do just unnecessary amounts of provoking, or what was that just hideous one, Rick, with the... people and they did like the blood rituals and the fire rituals. Extreme paranormal, is that what it was?
Extreme paranormal.
Like? I can't imagine
doing black magic rituals on television. That's crazy.
So what do you think about shows like that where, John and Sally Public, who don't have any context into which to put these types of experiences, are sitting down watching that, and then they go to someplace haunted and they think that that's how they're supposed to approach ghosts. What would you say to people like that?
It is the worst way to initiate communication or to get the attention of those that have found it is the absolute worst way. I mean, I know for myself, and Cheryl, I know probably you don't like being provoked, do you?
No.
Calling out your name. You don't like people swearing at you and just completely disregarding your morals. And I think that's what it's doing. It's disregarding all of their morals. Mm-hmm. And one of these days, Ghost Hunters and those other shows that kind of provoke and go in there and just belittle are going to be in some serious trouble. And Proof uses what we call IPA, and it's pretty new, but it's basically common sense. And IPA is a specialized technique that has been devised and a successful method of spirit contact and communication. And what it is, it's a technique, and it's basically, you know, okay, for instance, I'll walk into a home, and I will spend 30 to 45 minutes of my own time before the investigation begins, and I will talk about me, everything about me. You know, of course, you say the name, the date, the time, but you talk about you, talk about your job, talk about your family, talk about your interests, talk about your education, talk about you. And therefore, you know, they feel a bit more comfortable coming forward. Cheryl, let me give you an instance, okay? Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yes.
All right, for instance, if you or not, you and I were on an elevator together, having never met or perhaps even seen each other before, and I come right out and start asking you a multitude of questions, what would your reaction be?
I would probably remember the movie Devil and back into the corner of the elevator and, you know.
Exactly. You'd be scared, you'd be confused, you'd be weary of my intentions. Now say, if we've never met again, but I begin telling you my name, I start talking about myself a little bit, trying to initiate a conversation with you. So within 30, 45 minutes, you know, you'd be a bit more comfortable telling me about yourself, would you not?
Well, I tend to be kind of a standoffy bitch, so you might have a little trouble with me, but I bet it'd work on somebody like Rick.
Okay, yeah. Well, basically, it really does.
Probably would.
If you're able to commit 30 minutes of your time, if you're busy schedule, to talk a little bit about yourself to the spirits, they're going to say, okay, well, I don't know this guy very well, but he's evidently a nice person. He evidently wants to speak to me. So, you know, you got to... That method has never failed, and it affords better and more frequent communication between the two because you're able, they feel more comfortable. They can familiarize themselves with you.
Right.
I've never failed with EVPs when it comes to IPA. When you go in there and you're provoking and screw this and screw that and this and that, it's just not the way to go.
I want to know is then, do you follow up those questions with the really stupid EVP questions? What is your name?
That's ridiculous. No, you know, I talk about myself, you know, for the 30, 45 minutes, and then they go ahead, and of course, I ask if they'd be comfortable to share with me their name. And I give that about, you know, a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and then I go on, and we all have a list of questions that we use. But basically, I kind of want people to go with their own instinct and ask whatever they feel is comfortable, because they've already heard from you. Right. Now it's your time to hear from them. And usually, I tell you, Cheryl, it works. Try it. It really does work.
Well, we actually do a little something like that anyway. We talk to them and tell them what's going on and who we are and who's with us and what's going on in the world and what the year is and all of that stuff. And then we have, like, normal conversations. And what's really interesting is when we get our EVPs a lot or when they seem to want to butt in on our normal conversation because they want to participate in that.
Yes, and they do mimic quite a bit as well.
Go ahead, Rick.
I'm really sorry about that. I was experiencing a lag there, so I didn't hear you talking, Joe, so I apologize. You know, one of the things, too, that, you know, when you have the, when you have on, like, the television shows, the one thing that they don't take into consideration is a cultural type thing. If you go into a home that is, you know, allegedly haunted by a Victorian era woman, she's not going to answer when you're being demanding and when you're swearing. And, women at that time were very prim and proper. And, you know, basically,
like
with them,
me.
basically with them, you're going to catch, you know, more bees with honey rather than, you know, poop. So, yeah,
I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
I really do. And it's never failed me. People forget that spirits, you know, the dead, were once just like you and I. They still expect you to be respectful. They still expect morals. They still expect two-way communication. You know what I mean? So people that go on and they start provoking, they're just awful. I don't even watch them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have trouble watching too. So I would imagine that your professional background as a social worker, because it's a social science, so you're in the social sciences in any way, and then you're dealing in the parapsychology. I would imagine that all meshes very well for you.
It does. It really does. I love them. I love them both. I mean, my daytime job is a bit difficult. You know, I deal with violent youthful offenders. So, I mean, I come home with broken noses sometimes and broken ribs and all that good stuff.
Been there, done that.
Never done that. I'll give it a try. and then I go in the middle of the night and I start to interact. So regardless of what I'm doing, I'm always dealing with people. Always.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly. Exactly. There's definitely a correlation there. So, So I know you brought some EVPs, and I think what we're going to do is I want to hear them because I hear that they're just awesome. And Rick and I both go into EVPs, and we go in blind. Mm-hmm. So, Cheryl, how close are we to being ready to take a break? Are you about ready? We can go to break now and then come back with EVP.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so let's go to break. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio, and we will be right back.
Hi everyone, it's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, I'm Joe Perry.
And Steven Tyler from Aerosmith, here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never
let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking. So keep it real, keep it real. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Did you know that you can talk to your favorite show hosts from the ZTalk Radio Network? Check out the forum and see what it's all about at ztalkradio.com.
Save me from falling.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio. This is Rick Hale, and I'm here with you, Karen Frazier, and we've been talking to Joseph Gallant of Proof Paranormal, and he's been telling us about a malicious attack that he had endured at the hands of a possible diabolical entity. But now that we're back from break, we're going to be going to some EVPs.
Okay, so Cheryl, that means you must be with us.
I am here.
The Cheryl is with you.
I have arrived. Don't run out of the room screaming. Okay.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to turn up the sound on our broadcaster so that the listeners can maybe get a better listen at these. So what we're going to do is we're going to start playing some EVPs from Joe, and we're going to play them, and then Joe can tell us about how these were captured and what he thinks they say, and then we'll play them again so that the listeners can get another shot at it.
Perfect.
Okay, great. Let's start with the first one. Okay, so there's the first one.
Well, that just sounded like somebody like spewing pea soup.
can you set that one up for us, Joe?
I'm sorry?
Hang on a second.
In what context did you capture that pea soup spewing EVP?
Yeah, I couldn't even hear that one, to be honest with you.
No?
Do you want me to tell you the label that we have for this one?
Yeah.
Okay, this one, I believe, is from the Mansfield case, and it's labeled Child Burn.
Yeah, that one says, I let the children burn. And it's kind of between B and C for classes.
Mm-hmm.
And the EVP came as soon as we lifted up the hatch from the basement and found what looked like human remains, and is now being reviewed by the police as human remains. And that EVP came from that incident.
Oh. All right, let's listen to it again.
Let's hear it again.
No, one more time.
Okay, hold on. I hear something that sounds like burns at the end, but I can't really capture the first part.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm bad at EVPs, as you know. My EVP interpretation is usually...
Yeah,
it's usually remiss. Okay, so... Okay. Next one. I heard somebody whisper. Can you play it again?
Was that C-3PO talking first? Because that kind of sounded like C-3PO.
Let me play it real quick.
I hear whispering and I hear consonants, but I don't know what it's saying.
What's the label say? Because I couldn't hear that either.
This one is labeled because we're watching you.
Yeah, well, I was taking pictures around the house, and it was about an hour to the completion of the investigation, and for some reason my camera was going completely black. I couldn't take a picture, so I said to myself, why can't I see anything? Just to myself, you know, I wasn't talking to anyone else. And then a second later, because we're watching you.
Okay.
Wow.
All right.
Can we hear that again?
This time.
Sure. Yeah,
it's totally
a whisper.
Got it. Yeah,
at the end, if you really listen closely, you can hear it.
Yeah, it's like I say, I can hear the whispers and the consonants, and I kind of heard watching because I was listening for it. So, okay, next one.
Okie dokie, here we go.
Again.
That was a little bit inappropriate.
This one, you haven't been on this show long. We've been pretty well behaved for you this evening. Oh.
This one might have a bad. There's a bad word in it.
Is it the bad word that we're not allowed to say on Z-Talk Radio?
Yes, it is. It is.
So it's F what?
Again.
F again.
Yeah. This was from Mansfield as well, right, Joe?
Yeah.
Okay.
What does it say again? I'm sorry.
Can I say the word out loud or can I just...
No, you can't.
This particular one, unfortunately, we can't.
All right. So it's, she got effed again.
Okay. All right. I'll listen.
Okay.
I got the again. One more time.
It's real fast. Yeah.
Yeah, I got that.
Well, again, this is me we're talking about, so I heard little bits of it, but not the whole thing. I didn't hear the F-bomb, but maybe my ears are just so pure that they filter it out.
Right.
And little birds and deer follow you around, right, Karen?
They do. You know it. Okay. Next.
What is this?
Okay, did you hear it at the end? There was a whisper at the end.
So there are two voices at the beginning, a male and a female, and then there's a voice after that. Is that right? Is that what I'm hearing? Okay, let's listen again.
What is this?
Is that weirdo with the tree?
I'm not a weirdo?
Yeah, that's kind of what I heard.
What's the label?
I don't know. The label's I don't know.
But Karen, you are a weirdo.
Weirdo in mom jeans.
Do you want me to play it one more time?
I know what that is. I picked up something in the house. It was like this weird, like, shape thing, and it was like smushy. It was disgusting. It was weird. And I said, "What is this?" And then right after, a woman comes through and says, "I don't know."
Okay. All right. Let's listen again.
What is this?
I got the I don't know very clearly that time. Okay, all right. Let's play it one more time for people listening live.
What is this?
Is that weird one with the tree?
Okay, that's pretty clear once you know what you're listening for.
Now, hold on a second there. It actually sounds more like a they don't know rather than an I don't know.
Well, now we have to play it
again. Upon review, I heard I don't know. I mean, everyone hears it different. It could, in fact, be they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't say for sure.
Let's play it one more time, Cheryl. I'm going to settle this.
Okay.
What is this?
Is that weird one with the tree?
I hear they.
Yeah.
And it definitely could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what I hear, so I didn't settle it. Sorry. Cheryl, you got a vote?
How dare you? I'm going to say they. Yeah, I think it's they.
Definitely what it sounds like.
Yeah. Okay, do we have more?
Yeah, we do. We have a few more. Okay, let's go to the next one.
We've moved rooms now. So, if you'd be...
Well, I heard creepy. The whispering in the middle, but I didn't understand what it said because I wasn't really listening. Can we do it again? I mean, I was listening, but never mind.
We've moved rooms now, so if you
it's pretty clear. This one's pretty clear if you kind of press the earpiece up to your ear and really listen underneath.
Okay,
it.
Hang on. Let me press on the sides of my head.
Okay.
Go.
We've moved rooms now, so.
I can hear that it's whispering, yeah. But I don't have any idea what it's saying because it's kind of over the voice.
What did the label say?
I still like that room better.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something like
the room better. We were doing a group phase in the basement, and it's when we all sit together and we kind of manipulate the energy force, and we all use our energy so they can feed off of it more effectively. Mm-hmm. And we're asking questions, and we weren't getting any kind of activity in one section of the basement, so we went ahead and we moved.
Okay.
And then EVP came on and said, "Well, I still like that room better," kind of saying, "Well, you should have went back there."
Okay. All right, so let's hear it again now and see if I got it.
Okay.
We've moved rooms now, so if you do...
Well, that time I got it, yeah.
Yeah, I still don't hear that, but I do hear something there.
Combination of pressing that earphones up against my head and knowing what it's supposed to be saying. Brad does wonders. Okay. All right. What's the next one?
Okay. The next one is also from the Mansfield case.
Okay.
How old are you?
I had nothing.
Did I hear 21?
No, do you want me to tell you? You want to listen to it again?
I want to listen to it again.
old are you?
That one, you,
all I hear is
there, but it's really
like
hard to hear.
Monster band. I think it might be an EVP of Korn. A lot of people have those. I know, monster or something.
It actually says "Help us," and it says it twice.
When does it say it? Bit,
I'm sorry.
When does it say it?
As soon as it says it, because it said, "How old are you?"
Yeah.
Or can we help you with something? And they almost immediately after. It says, help us. And it says, it's almost like a multitude of them, like several of them all can join.
Okay. All right. Let's listen again.
Does it say it again at the end?
Yes.
Okay. Because I caught the one at the end. So here, let's play it again.
How old are you?
It's kind of freaky.
I don't get it. I can't hear anything.
It's like you said, Karen, it's Cookie Monster EVP.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, at the end, I heard a drawn-out help us, a very low kind of like rally. I don't know if that's what's there. But
That's right. It's Rammstein.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's right. Random German heavy metal band or death metal band reference.
Okay. Well, like industrial
metal.
We have three
more.
Three more, yay, yeah. Okay.
Okay. I think this one is very clear, if I remember from when I listened earlier. So let's play this one.
I heard Tweety Bird.
Oh, there goes so much for my, it's clear.
Okay.
Ooh. See, this one gives me the shivers because I can hear clearly what it sounds.
Is it a woman's voice, or mm-hmm. is that somebody who's in the room?
It sounds like there's two voices.
What's the label say?
Oh, I'm sorry. Tell her something. Tell her she's dead.
Yeah.
To me, at the echo, sorry. Go ahead.
Very, very clear. It sounds for me on this side of the phone. It sounds very like you can't hear anything.
Right.
But it's tell her something. Like kind of quiet, and then tell her she's dead, which is pretty pronounced.
Yeah.
And that was, and it's interesting because when I was doing an EVP session, and I think it's one at the same time, I had gotten a call from my mother who had announced that my grandmother had just passed away.
Oh.
And it was it was weird because upon reviewing the evidence and the time that my mother had called and the time my grandmother had died, it was almost as if she was saying, "Well, tell her she's dead," you know.
Oh.
Wow.
Wow. Okay, let's listen to that one again. Got it.
Yeah. Got it.
Wow. Last part, especially.
Yeah, got it.
She's dead. You can hear that.
Yep. Very good. You have good ears, boy. Okay. All right. Two more?
Yes, two more.
Okay.
Two more from the Mansfield case. So play the last two.
Ooh, I totally got that.
Wait. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that you talking?
Me?
Was that Joe talking, or was that actually the EVP?
What was it saying?
I don't know. Let's listen again. Hang on.
That's an EVP.
The "who is here with us" is an EVP?
"Wish you with us" is what it says.
It says, yeah. It says, "who is here with us."
Okay.
What I heard when I was reviewing was "wish you with us." It's sort of saying, "I hope you die and come here."
Oh, okay. Let's listen. That's freaky. Let's listen again. That's very clear.
"Wish you with us."
I hear "who is here with us."
I definitely hear "wish you." "Wish you with us."
I go with "wish you with us" as well.
Fine. Okay, one more time.
Okay. Oh, Karen, don't go in now. Just go away.
Here we go.
I still hear "who is here with us."
I think it's "wish you with us."
I think you guys, if you guys all agree, you're probably right. But we've already decided that I'm faulty. So, okay.
We have one more from the Mansfield case. Here we go.
Well, that was quick.
It's fast, but it's there. If you can hear it, let me play it again.
I heard it. Yeah, it was. One more time.
There's something there, but.
But I certainly hear something. What is that?
You're going to catch me.
Cheryl? Sorry, guys. We just had a lag.
Oh, you did you not hear me? I'm sorry. It's you're going to catch me, or you're going to catch me.
Yeah, you're going to catch me. It's upon review, there's a female. And you think it's a female that homes on the second and third floor. And you can hear kind of footsteps on the second floor. The EVP was actually left on the mantle, because sometimes we'll leave EVPs and use walkie-talkies in order to communicate with them, because we don't want people running around and messing things up. And an EVP came through and said, "You're going to catch me."
Huh. Wow.
Okay, let's hear it again. One more. That's so fast. I hear catch. Oh, now I heard gonna catch. Quick.
I can hear the whole thing, but I listened to it earlier, so that's probably why.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so can you give people your website, Joe?
I can. It's www.teamproof.com.
Teamproof.com?
Yep.
Okay.
T-E-A-M. Yep, proof.com.
And you also wrote about the Mansfield case in, was it the February issue, Cheryl?
Yes, yeah. Joe's article is in the February issue, and it's a detailed account of Proof's and Joe's investigation of the Moore home.
Along with pictures of those scratches.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wow, that's...
Yeah, it's pretty
ouch.
Intense. Yeah. Boy. So,
ouch is right. It's very, very painful.
Yeah, I would be interested, as you are sort of dealing with the aftermath of this, Joe, and working through it, and if you actually wind up talking about that with your therapist, I'd really be interested in talking to you and finding out kind of what the response was, because...
Definitely, I'll keep in touch with that.
Yeah, because like we were talking about during the break, I think that PTSD may be actually... more prevalent in the paranormal than we think, but who's going to tell a doctor that? Because they're going to think you're crazy.
Right.
Absolutely.
Now so, yeah.
I'll keep you up to date on what's going on.
Okay, perfect. So, we are going to take a quick break. Is that right, Cheryl?
Yeah.
And when we come back, we are going to be talking to Andre, and his last name just flew out of my head.
Frantoni?
Frattino.
Frattino.
Frattino, that's right. Okay, so we're going to be talking with Andre Frattino when we come back, and he is a cartoonist, and he also has been working as a paranormal investigator and a consultant on some paranormal shows. So in the meantime, we will be back in just a few minutes, and Joe, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much, Joe. It's fascinating.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys.
Okay, well, we will be right back with Andre Frattino on Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Hold on, we'll be right back.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. Odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. And the odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 150. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen.
Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Nick Redfern, and you're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio.
Well, hey, everybody, welcome back. That was a really interesting conversation that we had with Joe Gallant.
Fascinating.
Oh, my gosh. I learned a lot, and I think that so many people who watch Ghost Adventures and some of those provoking shows really need to listen to that interview and listen to what Joe has to say, because it's... Yeah. Okay, so switching gears, our next guest is Andre Fratino, and he is an illustrator who lives and works in Savannah, Georgia. He published his first graphic novel, and his heroes in the novel are ghost hunters. The book is called Flagler's Few and the Reaper of St. George Street.
I'm sorry, I read that. That was you, Andre?
Yeah, you actually read that book?
I did read Rick. That. I found that at a local library, hysterical. Dude. Sorry.
Okay.
I loved it. Loved it.
I'm done with my introduction, even though I wasn't, and we're going to jump right into it. Andre, welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. See, what we were telling you on the break is totally true. He always harshes my mellow, Andre.
I'm sorry, Karen.
He harshes my paranormal mellow, let me tell you.
No, I just got excited because I really liked that graphic novel, and
I can't believe it was in a library or anything. That's crazy. I didn't know it was out there that yet. But
yeah, awesome. Yeah.
So talk amongst yourself. I'll sit back and listen.
Well, you know, since Andre likes to hear himself talk so much, we'll allow him to do it.
So tell us about Flagler's Few and the Reaper of St. George Street, Andre.
Well, it's the first of a proposed series. I'm working on the next book right now, and it's going to be about 13 books. That's my very, very eager endeavor. I don't know if it'll make it that far, but I have at least 8 books planned. And it's based in Florida, in St. Augustine, which is the oldest city in the nation. And it features a lot of local legends of the city. St. Augustine has a reputation for being also one of the most haunted cities in the nation. And, you know, the team of ghost hunters, or the Flagler's Few, are a ragtag group. And, you know, it's a wannabe pirate named Roger Blimes, and a skeptic named William Gehring, and a modern-day witch named Raven. Mm. And, of course, the quintessential comic book nerd, Frankie Dinkelmeyer. And, it's kind of like, you know, I guess you could say Buffy the Vampire Slayer meets Ghost Hunters meets Ghostbusters or whatever. But every book is going to focus on a different paranormal or supernatural happening. So this first one was kind of a foyer into ghosts. The next one is actually about vampires and pirates and pirate legends. And then the next one after that will be about the skunk ape. And following that will be USOs, which are, of course, unidentified submersible objects. So as the stories go on, there'll be more and more. But the next book I'm working on, which is actually a spinoff, is called Destination Unknown. And it actually is set in, it's a spinoff of the first book featuring some of the characters, and it's set in 1930s Savannah, Georgia. And it's going to have a lot to do with the hoodoo culture that's in this area, or a lot of root works. There's an island just south of us called Saplo Island, and it's... one of the original settlements for African slaves after they were brought here from the across seas in Africa. And a lot of their Geechee and the Gullah cultures there focus on root work and the belief in the supernatural and spirits. And so we're trying to do a little segue into that interest.
So. Very good. So I would imagine that there is a lot involved in creating a graphic novel. You know, just it's not like me where I can just sit down and write something and then edit it and call it good. Because with a graphic novel, there's graphic elements as well. So how long does it take you to do one of these things?
Well, the first book, it took me a year to do. And actually, the first book is available right now. It's actually, I just combined the first and second book together, which is there was 2 books that equaled the first one, Flagler's Few and the Reaper of St. George Street. And now it's one combined book. And it took me 1 year to complete the first novel, and then it took me 6 months to complete the second. And it is a lot of work. It's, you know, you have to do the story, you have to write it out, you have to do the dialogue, then you have to pencil all the pages, and there's about 324 pages in the final book, the latest one I just put out this month. Mm-hmm. And it's... kind of like the compendium of the two books. And, it took a lot, but, most actual graphic novel artists who actually work in teams, it's common to do it by yourself, but a lot of people do it in teams where they have an inker and a colorist and a writer and then a penciler. And I'm lucky enough that this next book I'm working on it with a friend of mine named Ryan English, and he's a really amazing comic book artist himself. And so I'll be penciling and writing the pages, and then I just hand them off to him, and he inks them and makes them look pretty. And, hopefully our scheduled deadline for the next book will be this October or November.
So very nice. We're
push for this.
Right on.
So, it's a lot of work.
So just explain really quickly for people like me who read books and things but have never read a graphic novel, what's the difference between a graphic novel and a comic book?
This is a common question, but it's a really important one. The difference between comic books and graphic novels are that generally comic books are a 28-page or 32-page little flimsy paperback that you can get on, say, the grocery shelf or a comic book store. And graphic novels are either one of two things. They're either the combination of, say, a story arc of those comic books. Like, let's say you go to the store and you buy Spider-Man issue 455, because it's been around for a while. And from 455 to 472 or something, they had a story arc. Well, they would take all of those all those comics after it's been in print and combine it into one book for, somebody to read as a whole story. Mm-hmm. But also lately, the real traditional idea of a graphic novel is just what it means. It's a novel in graphic form. And a lot of people now are actually turning to graphic novel form for a lot of different things. I mean, they just made the Bible in the graphic novel form. And
no way!
A lot of the movies.
Yeah,
the Bible's been out as graphic novel form. I saw the book, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
And it's kind of amazing because
recently.
I was just going to say, it's amazing with the Bible graphic novel, because, I mean, Jesus and Moses are just freaking huge.
So
they're major superheroes, right?
Is it all dialogue, and then you move the story and set the scene along with the images, or do you also include descriptions in there?
You mean in my book or in graphic novels in general?
In graphic novels in general.
In general, what happens is that, people illustrate them to the words. If it was a book that was already written, they would just illustrate it to accent. And the book, the writing and the illustration complement each other, But lately, there's been a real rise in the popularity of graphic novels, and you'll see a lot of movies now being made that are based off of graphic novels. Mm-hmm. But the one thing you don't see a lot of is paranormal graphic novels, In the early days of comics, there used to be monster comics and, horror, crypt, Tales of the Crypt and stuff like that as a comic book form. But lately,
DC Comics
were
great.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, DC Comics is one of the first ones. But, there hasn't been a lot of paranormal graphic novels, actually designed for ghost hunters, My hope is that eventually, with the next set of stories, I'll be able to get more involved in the actual myths and legends that, these legend trippers love to go through, and, paranormal investigators, and then eventually these books will actually complement all, lovers of the paranormal,
Right. Now, you are no stranger to the paranormal. You didn't just one day think, well, I got to write a paranormal graphic novel. Tell me what it is in your background, other than living in St. Augustine, that led you to a paranormal graphic novel?
I remember watching the History Channel once, and they were talking about archaeologists and Indiana Jones, and how any archaeologist would be lying if they told you that Indiana Jones did not inspire them to become an archaeologist.
Right.
And I think that's the same way for ghost hunters, but for ghost hunters, it's, of course, the TV show or the movie Ghostbusters,
sure.
Growing up, I was a big Ghostbusters fan. I mean, I had all the cartoons and all the toys and the movies, and I was just absolute. For the first 3 years of my Halloweens, I was always dressed as a Ghostbuster. But that's where it started. And then,
very cool.
As time went on, of course, all those summers I spent in St. Augustine, I just got really involved in the local folklore and the legends. And then when I moved to Savannah to go to the Savannah College of Art and Design, I got a gig as a ghost tour guide, and I've been a ghost tour guide for now almost five and a half years.
Oh, that's pretty cool gig, isn't it?
Very cool.
It is a wonderful gig. If you are a big, if you love ghosts and you love the paranormal, it's a great gig. And so, you know, yeah, it beats being a bag boy at a grocery store.
That's right.
So
let's talk about those people who go on ghost tours. First of all, I have to ask: did you say that Ghostbusters came out when you were like a wee young child?
Yeah, probably. Actually, the year it came out was the year I was born. The first.
Oh my God! I was already a grown up then.
So yes, and I actually, God, recently I know this sounds a little obsessive, but I had an old military jacket that I wore a lot, but I wanted to spruce it up a bit, and my girlfriend had bought me a Ghostbuster patch. And as I'm ironing the Ghostbuster patch on, I'm thinking, oh my God, I have reached a new level of nerdiness. You know, and I'm sitting there ironing, I'm like,
there is nothing wrong with that.
There isn't, because I've gone to bars, and I go to restaurants, and I go out to the stores, and I've had, don't tell my girlfriend, the hottest women say, I love your Ghostbuster patch, you know?
See, so, there you go. You fly your freak flag high, my friend. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Everybody loves it. Everybody loves it. So since then, I've slapped on an X-Files patch, and, you know, the Hellboy patch, and the Fringe patch, and
right on.
I've taken it overboard by now. So
you know what? Believe it or not, chicks dig nerds these days. It's amazing.
They do. They really do.
I'm married to one. I'm married to Techie McScience Geek, the ultimate nerd. And, you know, I got to tell you, I find him pretty hot. So there you go.
Well, they're just hoping to land the next J.J. Abrams and then make millions and millions of dollars.
Why I picked him out. That was it. So when you do these ghost tours, I just always find people who... I've never been on a ghost tour, but I've been on like tours of the Seattle Underground, for instance, in Seattle, which is a kind of a well-known haunt in the Pacific Northwest here. And it's funny to watch the people, because you can see the people who are there and they know that there are ghosts and they're a little afraid of them. So do you get some kind of interesting people coming through on those ghost tours who have a little fear and concern over what they're about to do?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, I always have. I've had age groups from, you know, 5 on the ghost tours, and then I've had older adults and people who really are scared. And, you know, it's really actually the fun of coming out on a ghost tour. You're supposed to be scared. You're supposed to be a little bit on edge. But I always like, you know, relax everybody. I have joking tour parts of the tours, and some of the stories are funny, you know, but I never, ever tried to tell them a fluffy ghost story. There are so many fluffy ghost stories in the Savannah area that I try to find the darker ones. And even with the darker ones, if you throw it off a little bit with some humor, nobody is ever 100% scared, because you don't ever want anybody peeing their pants. You just want them on the edge of the seat.
Oh, dude, I do.
I do. I totally do.
You like peeing your pants? That's more.
No, I
didn't say I don't want to pee my pants. I want to see other people do it.
There was one time I gave a tour to a group of drama students, and there was this guy, he must have been 350, maybe 400 pounds, a big guy, you know, almost looked like he could have been like a linebacker or something, and there's a part of the tour where there's actually, they stuck a mannequin in one of the windows, and you know, she'd walk by it, and people freak and everything. I always tell the story right before they can see the mannequin. When this guy saw the mannequin up there looking out, and had all this black hair in front of it so you couldn't see his face, and it looked like he was clawing at the window, this kid slammed all of these little 90-pound girls away and, like, charging down the street. It was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen. It was hysterical.
I love it. Well, you have to be...
And all
you
the
have to
girls
be...
are looking at him.
You have to be a little bit of an entertainer to do tours, any kind of tours, but especially ghost tours, I would think, because you do have to have a little bit of a flair for the dramatic and be able to spin a story the right way. And you strike me as maybe a guy who's a storyteller.
I am. I really am. In the past years, I've really started to really hold on to that title, and I love being a storyteller, whether it's comedy stories or ghost stories or whatever, but it really does require that you have a love for what you're telling. And believe it or not, there's a lot of people out there who just tell ghost stories, or ghost tour guides who do it for for the money, for the paycheck, which is not glamorous. It's not a glamorous lifestyle, but, you know, you have to be able to, when you tell people, I've had one tourist, she was a chaperone on a tour. She came up to me, she says, you know what, you make this so good, because you were so serious about it. And, you know, she said, when you can tell when you talk, you have truth behind this. And I don't sugarcoat it. On my ghost tours, every story that I tell, I research thoroughly. I go back and I try and find all the legends. I try to find as many different documentations, whether it's through books or records or even, you know, from word of mouth. And then what I do is I try to find all the consistencies of each story, and I try to tell them the closest to what the original legend was. Because ghost stories are a lot like playing a game of telephone, you know. You whisper to one person's ear, a story goes around the table, gets back, it's not the same thing. And it's important that when you're telling a ghost story, if you really want to make it convincing, to make it real. Don't make up a lie. Don't say, oh, you know, I remember this time. People don't want to hear so much about your personal experience. They want to know if you've experienced ghosts. But they'd rather hear the dead, honest truth of the story, or at least as truthful as you can get. And that's what scares them, the idea that, hey, this guy really means what he's talking about, and he really knows what he's talking about. So that makes it a little scarier than, you know, say, somebody who's out there just reciting what they hear.
Right. Well, not only that, too, you could also hurt the field by lying about it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, and I do pride myself as a scientific paranormal investigator, so it's important, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Andrew, I'm sorry, Andre. I know, I'm sorry. I was actually...
People do it all the time.
No, I was actually... Somebody put something in the chat window that said something about Andrew, and I was reading what she wrote instead of...
yeah, I see it too.
So anyway, Andre, we do this thing at the end of our show called the Lightning Round, and you seem like just like the perfect personality to be involved in it. Would you like to stick around and do our Lightning Round with us?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. Well, first, Cheryl has to get Bert Coates on the phone. So, Cheryl, you want to grab Bert so that we can do the Lightning Round?
Yes. Yes, I can grab Bert. I don't know if he'll enjoy it, but I'll grab him. Hold on.
Do we really have to? He's a jerk.
Bert likes to be grabbed, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Bert's a jerk. Hey, I love Bert.
All right, we're trying to get Bert.
You really found my book on the northwest side of the Pacific Coast in a library.
She's in Chicago.
I'm in Chicago.
Oh, you're in Chicago. You found it in Chicago. Oh, wow.
I found it at a local library in Chicago. Yeah, I was leafing through it.
Oh, there we go. I think we have Bert on the line. Bert, that you?
Hey, how the hell are you?
Hey, good to talk to you. It feels like it's been so long. We just did this. We just had you come on because you've been telling everybody that you were banned from Paranormal Underground Radio.
Yeah, what's up with that, dude?
Wait, what? Bert's on? Oh, my God. Wait. I have to brace myself. Hold on. Okay, go.
Okay. It's all good. So, Cheryl, while I try and find my lightning round questions, would you explain to Andre how the lightning round works?
Sure. No problem. The lightning round is our typical end of the show event. It's kind of event-like. And Karen will ask each of us a question. Well, she asks one question, and then we go around in a round circle and answer it quickly, although sometimes it's not quickly, but it's used to be called the lightning round.
It's
not so much lightning
quickly
anymore, but it's supposed
to
be.
So you ask a question, and then we try and say whoever says it first.
No. We just take turns. So I'll ask a question, and I just want everybody's one or two line answer to it. We call it the lightning round because actually what used to happen is when we originally had this show, here's a history lesson for everyone involved. When we had this show originally, it was a podcast, and we would have our guest on for about 45 minutes, and then we'd have probably a 30 to 45 minute roundtable discussion afterwards. So when we transitioned to this radio show, we eliminated that discussion, and I missed it because I like to hear myself talk. So we came up
she
with
does.
A lightning, I do. So we came up with a lightning round instead. So we are going to have Andre, and we've got Bert Coates of NWPIA. Hey, Bert, say hi to Andre.
Hi, Andre.
Hey, Bert.
How are you?
Hey, Bert.
Not bad.
Hey, what's that?
You got the Sesame Street thing there. I heard somebody say that.
So. And
hello,
then,
Bert. How are you?
Chad, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and Cheryl, so here we go. I'll go in order that I see you on my screen. So here's the first one. Yahoo News has reported that zombie ants, this is for you, Cheryl, whose minds are being controlled by a fungus that spreads its spores when the ant, while the ant lives. So what it does, okay, let me start over. There are these ants, and there's this fungus, and this fungus is getting into these ant brains, and it's controlling the brains, and the ants are not in control of their brains anymore, and they become these zombie ants that are controlled by the fungus until the fungus ultimately kills them and takes over. So here's my question. What do you think the possibilities are that if this works on ants, it could do it to people, Bert?
Whoa, I wasn't listening.
Bert!
I'm sorry. You said Cheryl, and I thought you were just speaking to Cheryl. So I tuned you out. But okay, let's talk about ants and fungus.
And zombies, Bert. Zombies.
No, do the zombies? No, okay. The ants enter the zombies' ear through.
No, the ants become zombies because the fungus controls their brains.
Okay, so the fungus and ants. I'm going to work with this here.
Can it control your brain? That's all I'm asking, Bert.
Okay, you know, I think one's got me now.
There we go. See, that was easy. Yep. So, Andre, were you listening?
I was listening. I heard on NPR once about something about this, a parasite that actually wasp could control a spider or something like that by injecting it. So I believe this is possible. So I don't have to say yes.
You think it's going to happen?
There is a possibility.
This is Cheryl's
biggest... Do you think it's going to happen to humans? I don't think so.
This is Cheryl's biggest fear, by the way. So, Chad, what do you...
It is.
Yeah. Chad, what do you think?
Well, actually, they say that each insect has a different fungus that is specific to it. So there is, I think it's possible that there's one that's specific to humans. We just haven't discovered it yet.
Oh, I'm not sleeping tonight with that answer. Rick?
This definitely proves my hypothesis that on December 21st, 2012, there will be a zombie apocalypse.
I am ready. I am ready. I've got wooden stakes. Now, what does it take to kill zombies, Cheryl?
A bat. Or a gun, a bullet through the brain.
I have a gun. Okay, all right. I have a gun. Like, I only have one. Anyway, so Cheryl, what do you think about this?
Okay, well, here's the thing. Chad showed me the story about a month or two ago. And so I've been living in fear since then. So I've been preparing myself because I believe it's totally possible.
Cheryl, when's your birthday?
June 11th.
Guess what I'm sending you?
What?
An ant farm.
Oh, man. I don't think I'm going to accept it. I'm sorry.
Those are fun.
I have to say no.
Okay, so this one is, I'm sorry, this is really morbid of me, but I think this story is really, really cool. There's a company in Sweden that's come up with a new way of disposing dead bodies. What they'll do is, and this is supposed to be an environmentally friendly way of disposing the dead bodies, what they'll do is they'll freeze your body, and then they'll smash it to bits. They'll
love
explode it. How cool is that, right? So here's what I want to know. It seems like a really epically cool, almost Terminator-style way of disposing of a dead body. I want to know how you would dispose of a dead body. Bert?
I have a fungus. No, I think I would dispose of a body. Anybody? Can I pick anybody to dispose of their body? Or
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Let me guess. He's going to pick me.
Oh, no, I know who he's imagining now. He just has to come up with how he's going to get
rid of it. I would start with a chainsaw, and I would make sure that the blade would be rusty and dull. They're still living? No, they're dead, right? Okay. And then I would add a little fungus, and I would chop them up and burn them and jump up and down.
Wood chipper.
Wood chipper.
Oh, it's like that scene in Fargo where the foot's hanging out of the wood. Oh, anyway. So, Andre, dead body, disposal, go.
I think I saw the best way on an episode of Nip Tuck. I would wrap them in ham and then throw them in the Florida Everglades.
So. That is awesome.
Nice. That is the best way to go.
That's really good. So, Chad, how about you?
So, do they keep these bodies frozen once they've smashed them up, or do they let them
defrost? No! Oh, you want to hear what they actually do with them once they've smashed them to bits? Then they put them in a dehydrator where they suck all the moisture out. Then they put them in a cornstarch.
Human jerky?
Yeah, no, because it's human jerky bits. And then they put the human jerky bits.
Soylent greener people!
I know, and then they put the human jerky bits and sell them as bacos. No, they put them in a... They put them in a cornstarch coffin, and then it's all biodegradable, and it all biodegrades within about 12 months.
I'm never going to look at Jack Lynx again the same way.
So, Chad, how are you disposing of a dead body, Chad?
Shoot it off in space.
Oh, very good. Okay. All right. Rick, you got a plan?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to go kind of with the same thing with Chad. I told my wife that when I die, I want my body shot out of a cannon into Lake Michigan. So,
can I stand there with my gun and shoot at you as you fly? No, keep
shooting. You know what? That'll be okay because I'll be dead.
That's right. And Bert, I know where we could have our next shootout if Rick dies soon.
Excellent. I've seen Rick too. He's a pretty big target.
Those are old pictures, dude. I'm 100 pounds lighter now.
That's right. Okay, so Cheryl, dead bodies.
Well, I don't know how unique this is, but I always thought maybe disintegrating dead bodies in a vat of acid sounded kind of cool.
Very nice. Dude. Okay, all right, you guys are all very twisted, and so twisted that, guess what? I'm back on the whole Lady Gaga, or the whole breast milk baby Gaga thing, because it's in the news again this week.
Oh, wait a minute. You skipped one. You skipped a question.
I'll go back to that one. I realized I did it.
You're talking about breast milk ice cream?
Yes, we're talking...
I didn't know she was responsible for that. Oh, God.
No. We're talking about the breast milk ice cream. In last week's installment of the breast milk ice cream soap opera, the British Parliament or whatever, the British food people had seized it, saying it's not safe. Well, they've released it. They say it's perfectly safe. So you can now eat breast milk ice cream. But here's the thing. They're in jeopardy still because Lady Gaga is considering suing them because they have named it Baby Gaga. So,
you know, the real disgusting question of this is why, who is the one who's taste testing this? And how are they taste testing comparing it to something?
People are buying it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, people are buying it. People are eating it. It's like $30 a scoop or something.
Like if somebody...
Europeans are weird.
Drinking like real breast milk just to test to make sure that it's comparable, because that's the creepy thing.
I don't have an answer for that. So here's what I want to know is, do you think that where do you think that this whole ice cream thing is going? Do you think that Lady Gaga's going to start suing babies when they start to babble and say Gaga? Do you think that that this ice cream is going to become a worldwide sensation? What do you think is going to happen, Bert?
I think she's going to sue the porn industry for saying gag, gag, gag.
Oh, gag. Okay. Yeah. So, Andre, where do you think this story is going?
Oh, I don't know. People evidently can copyright words now. So I think she'll try and sue, but hopefully she won't win.
Yeah. Chad, mm-hmm. What do you think?
I don't think she'll win because they actually don't use her image in association with it. So.
No. Well, and not only that, it's Gaga. It's what babies say. So, Rick?
I mean, if she's going to start suing, I'm in trouble because Theodore just said Gaga for the first, he's been saying that lately, so.
Totally effed, dude.
Yeah, totally.
Cheryl?
Oh, I think it's ridiculous. There's no way she can sue for this. It's silly.
Well, she can. You can sue for anything, true. Whether it has merit or not, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think she'll get far.
We'll go back to the one that Rick was worried about. The Daily Mail reports that researchers are suggesting that we're on the brink of another mass extinction event that may eradicate up to 75% of life from the face of the planet. It would be the sixth such mass extinction event in the history of the planet. So if you're one of the few people who's left over after this mass extinction event, what's the first thing you're going to do? And we're going to go backwards this time. Cheryl?
Oh, my God. I'm just going to, dance around and, get crazy. I can do things that people think I'm weird.
Yeah, but that's maybe.
Right?
There's still going to be judgmental bitches left behind. Come on. Okay.
Oh, well, true.
So,
oh, well.
Rick, how about you?
Restart the porn industry.
Oh, that's
yes.
Winning.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's a winning idea.
There you go. So Chad.
Internet.
Well, I would say repopulate the Earth, but I've been fixed, so I can't do that.
Well, but nobody else is going to know that, dude.
Oh yeah.
TMI, Chad.
Got to make the marathon.
You can work for his porn industry.
There you go. Chad can be the new Ron Jeremy. So Andre, how about you? World's coming to an end.
I'm going to corner the market on comic book illustrations. I'm going to be the sole greatest comic book artist of all time.
The comic book king. And Bert, how about you?
You know, I'm going to hunt down all my nemesis and make sure they're dead.
He's not kidding.
Bert's angry tonight.
He laughed, but he's not kidding. Okay, so got another mass animal dying off to report. This time it's a bunch of dead sardines in Los Angeles raising a stink. And that pun was intended because I think sardines stink.
Wah, wah, wah.
Wah, wah, wah. So what do you think happened to these sardines, Cheryl?
Well, the story is what? That they ran out of oxygen when they went into some corner of the bay or wherever they are. Yeah, right, sure. Mm-hmm. I think it's just another sign of things going wrong.
Okay,
I'm negative today, too, by the way. So, sorry.
So, zombie jellyfish.
Oh.
We could have them with the zombie works. Ants and then zombie wrong. Jellyfish. Why not?
There you go, Chad.
Actually, it was lack of oxygen. I guess if you have, they used so much of, there's so many of them in one area that they used so much of it that it's died.
Well, maybe they should go back to living in those little tin cans then. Andre?
They get sent to Sweden, frozen, mashed up, and then stuck in a pine box.
Mm. Ooh, there you go. Bert?
Oh, I'm sorry. I quit breathing there for a second.
Lack of oxygen.
It's bad porn. That's what killed me. I mean, I'm just shoot straight here. There's a lot of porn out there. That's what killed them all.
Okay, so we're running out of time, so I have to decide which of these last three is my favorite one. We'll just go right down the, I kind of like the one about the monkeys dressed as pirates, but instead we're going to go with the most bizarre excuses for being late to work. So,
the monkey one is so much more fun.
I like the duck one.
Chad likes the duck one. Rick likes the monkey one.
Do both. Do the duck and the monkey one.
Okay.
Real quick.
All right. And we're going to skip the excuses. Okay. So UPI reports that a man working in a Florida conference room was interrupted when a duck crashed through a window and landed in the chair next to him. If a duck landed next to you at work, what would you say to it, Chad?
Quack.
Quack. Very good. Rick?
Affleck.
Cheryl.
And we just got sued.
Rick took my answer. Thanks, Rick. I got nothing else but Aflac.
Okay. Andre?
Do you have a permit for your duck?
Bird?
Who said ass crack?
That was me.
That was a good one. See, Rick took mine. Sorry.
Okay, all right. So final.
Suckers.
This is Rick's favorite, apparently. So last week, wildlife officials in Louisiana confiscated four monkeys dressed as pirates. A woman in Europe. I gotta tell you, I don't really have a question about this, but I just think monkeys in pirate suits would be adorable. I want to know if you think of anything cuter than monkeys in pirate suits. Cheryl?
I think Rick in a pirate suit would be cuter.
Okay. Rick?
I would like to see monkeys dressed up as like Luke, Leia, and Han.
So, oh my god, that would be so cute!
That would be great.
That would be awesome.
That would be adorable. Chad?
How about the characters from Rocky Horror?
Dr. Frankenfurter.
Nice.
So sweet. Andre?
I'd like to see him dressed up as Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah, of course you would. Of course.
Of course I would.
Bert?
Yeah, you know, the whole monkey with the pirate suit would be cuter if they all had condoms on.
Would they have them on their tails or somewhere else?
Yeah, no, probably on their tails. I want to keep this. I don't need to be banned again. So.
I think Bert is working for another ban.
This is a family.
Just kidding,
show,
Bert. You were never banned.
All right. So, okay. Cheryl, do we have time for the last question, or are we? Do we need to?
Unfortunately, we'll have to save it for next week.
All righty. So, Andre, I would like you to give everyone your website and where they can find your book.
All right. My website is at ARF Studios. That's A as in Apple, R as in Robert, F as in
Frank.
Fred. Frank, that's good. And then Studios. And it's all one word, and it's .net.
Okay.
And you can purchase my book from there. It has a link that sends you to my website.
Okay. BertNWPIA.com, right?
That's right.
All right, and I'm going to say ghostsecret.org, paranormalunderground.net. What do we have coming up next week, Cheryl?
We have Jack Kenna. He is the technical specialist and investigator for Spirits of New England, and he is also the case manager for the New England Center for the Advancement of Paranormal Science.
Whoa. Okay.
Wait a minute, did you say Jack Hanna?
Kenna. Jack Kenna.
The guy that used to... Come on,
K-E-N-N-A.
With monkeys dressed as pirates, yes. And that's what he's bringing on next week, so yay! No. I would be excited about monkeys dressed as pirates. As a matter of fact, I have a dog that looks like a monkey that I might go dress as a pirate, just, you know, for fun. So, okay.
Going up the mass extinction, so.
So, we have coming up Night Views Radio with Robin Travis. I don't know. Do we know what they're doing, Cheryl?
I don't.
Stick around. It's going to be awesome. And otherwise, we will see you next week. Visit us in the meantime at paranormalunderground.net. Thanks for listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Night.
Night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.